All right, so this is Fiona Sia interviewing Marilyn Levin on Friday, November 1st at her wonderful home. All right. So, I guess my first question is going to be, tell me a little bit about your family.
Okay, you're my immediate family now or my growing up family?
Growing up family to now, whatever.
Okay, well, my my growing up historical family... my parents were, my dad was from New York, my mother was from Little Rock, Arkansas. They met in Washington, D.C. before the war, and after my father, I mean, they were serious, but my mother didn't want to get married before the war, so when he came back and they married, they went to New York. Because my grandparents had a business, and as that business failed, my mother's family found my father a job down south, and so I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and then when I graduated college, I went to college in New Orleans and in Memphis, I went to Washington to work. My parents thought, hey, work for us, she'll meet a nice boy down, and sure enough I did. Mm-hmm. And when Richard and I met, we you know, he said, you know, where do you want to live? I said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, I think he's an attorney. He said, I think I'd probably be better if I was in practice in Wilmington, because that's where my family is and the family business and the connections. And I said, okay, I've already left my hometown. So almost 49 years ago, I moved to Wilmington, Delaware. And we proceeded to have two daughters, one of whom is 45 now, and one's 42. The older one followed in our footsteps. They were both good students, but the older one followed, and after graduating University of Delaware, went to Georgetown Law, as did her daddy, and that's where she met her now husband, who was also from New York, so she lived in New York for a few years until she got an in-house counsel job in the Philadelphia suburbs. And our younger daughter graduated SUNY Binghamton, with an acting degree.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And tried New York for a year. And luckily, you know, she said, you know, the temporariness in my life is just, she couldn't handle. So she too went to Washington, D.C. And that's where she has met her husband, but they're still down there. They're in Alexandria, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And now the next generation are three granddaughters.
Oh, so cute.
Two are twins. They'll be 11 in January, and the other one will be 6 in November. Oh. All three of them are dance fanatics.
Oh, so cute.
So so that's somewhat of how we are.
Awesome. Do you have any siblings or... anything like that?
I have a younger brother who is 3 years younger than I am, and I just turned 72, so I guess that makes him 69. Or 68, he'll be 69. I believe it or not, after all these years, I still get confused. We're 4 grades apart, that I know. Mm-hmm. He went to medical school.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and his wife now, and have ever since he fully finished his many years of training, have lived in the Philadelphia suburbs. And he's a pediatric hematologist, oncologist, blood banker, whatever. But he's also retired, and he has 2 daughters.
Oh, cool.
One of them's a doctor, so.
Awesome. And did you inherit, like, any familial, like, traditions or any possessions or anything that has, like, gone through the years?
Well, the traditions, we are on both sides Jewish. Mm-hmm. So the traditions are a certain level of practice and observance that is far from observant, but very comfortable, and a lot of gastronomic Judaism, and just spending holidays together and making it as fun a time as can be. And as far as possessions, not significantly. I do have, and I can show you, I have candlesticks that had been my great grandmother's, because they went to my mother. I have a couple of other things that had been, there's a little safe there that had been in the family, but both sides of my family, the New York and the Southern, and my grandparents on the New York side came from Romania, so they were first generation, and my grandfather on my mother's side was born in the old country, but they achieved a certain amount of success in life and lost. So the possessions are memories as much as nothing, value is in the sentiment.
I get that. So you said, where were you born again?
I was actually born in Brooklyn, New York. I didn't say, but good, caught me. because that's where my folks were living at the time. Mm-hmm. And my mother was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Or North Little Rock, which is on the other side of the Arkansas River from Little Rock. Because mm-hmm. that's where her father and grandfather had a haberdashery business. And that's why they were able, when my father's father had a dressmaking business and that went kaput mm-hmm. in the early 50s, that's why they were able to find him a job in Memphis, which where we had extended family.
What did your parents do in Brooklyn?
Well, Dad managed his father's dress manufacturing business, and Mother had been a secretary before the war. Mother was a valedictorian of her high school class. Smart woman, driven woman, a dancer. That's where my granddaughters get it. But her father lost the business with the Depression. So instead of going to college, and she'd be 102 now. So instead of going to college, she had to get a job. And she became a crackerjack secretary bookkeeper. I think she may have worked a tiny bit in New York, but not a lot, because they got married in December of 45, and I was born in October of 47, so there wasn't that much time for her to work.
So did you grow up in what kind of neighborhood did you grow up in?
A suburban. My parents were not well off. I grew up in Memphis. A two-bedroom house. Two-bedroom house, one bath. And they had, there was a family, a den, and a living room. And it was a little like bungalow. One bath. And then when my New York grandparents' business failed, they came to live with us. So Mother and Dad added on a room. So Grandma and Grandpa Herman had the master bedroom, only because it was bigger. We still all of us shared one bath. The room they added, my brother was in what would have been the den. My bedroom is they put the room, so in order to get to their bedroom in the added room, they had to walk through my bedroom. which, you know, I was 7 years old to, I guess, 11. And then we moved less than a mile and a half away to a house that had three real bedrooms and a den that they could make into their room and two beds. And then when my grandparents' health failed and they had to go into the nursing home, that's when we were able to be a little more normal in a three-bedroom house with mother and dad having the master and mm-hmm. and me having a bedroom and my brother having a bedroom.
Did you and was your community, like, were you in a Jewish kind of community? Were you involved with any Jewish organizations when you were growing up?
I was very involved with Jewish organizations. Back growing up, and it may have been the same here, from hearing his tale, it probably was, but I grew up in Memphis, and Jim Crow was the law of the land, so I went to schools that had black schools down the road, because, you know, heaven forbid, and I say this because it's somewhat carried over to Jewish-Christian relations,
mm-hmm.
so I can particularly remember in high school more than elementary school, but in high school, and I was very involved in high school, but there was like a one seat on our student council was, quote, the Jewish seat.
Oh, wow.
But you couldn't put up a slate of more than that number. At the time, I graduated in 65, high school in 65. I was vice president of the yearbook, but there were citywide clubs, very akin to sororities, that were non-Jewish. And they let a couple of Jews in. But mostly we had our own youth groups. So the temple, which was Reform, had Besti, or Softy, Southern, anyway. Most of the rest of us were in B'nai B'rith Youth, which was across all the denominations of Judaism. And I was very involved in my chapter and went on to run for office as district president of seven states in high school. So I was president of Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, and Pensacola, Florida, because it's under the panhandle there. And there were we had Jews in the three big cities, and you know, we had groups in the three big cities, so it was a large youth group. We had five chapters in Memphis of girls and five of boys, and that was probably 123 to 300 kids of high school age. So, yeah, that was pretty much my social life, although I was involved at school. But after, come the weekend, socializing was more Jewish.
And what did you do as your role as that president for all those states? Was it, like, very overwhelming?
The whole premise behind the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization, which it's B'nai B'rith Girls and the Olive Zadok Olive, is that it's a youth-run organization. So you learn leadership skills and you have programs. We had Jewish programming. We did community service. And when you assume leadership roles in a chapter, you know, I never was president of my chapter, but you do different, you know, the treasurer, you keep the books. Well, I was not, I did various chapter roles, and when you went on to the regional board, which I wasn't, my brother was, I was on the district board, you coordinate somewhat what the whole group does and try to keep peace among the various cities, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, there's a lot of headbutting.
And did you notice that a lot of Jewish organizations, did they change when you moved from either Memphis to D.C. or D.C. to here?
Yeah. Not so, I didn't notice so much in D.C. My last 2 years of college, I moved home, and I became a staff worker and became like the city director for BBYO with offices in the Jewish Community Center.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to D.C., an acquaintance, two acquaintances of mine, who I had, who he actually was the international boys president when I was district president, he and his wife, who I knew, were living in the D.C. area, not far from where my apartment was. So we became friendly, and we served as advisors to some of the youth groups in D.C. for a short period of time. And then when we moved up here, I tried to do the same thing, but it just didn't. I found employment up here, and most of the youth group activities were on the weekend when we wanted to play more as a couple,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to doing things. But I wasn't as involved then, but have always been involved with the Jewish community. We moved to Wilmington, and he had been the youth board president. So when they found out he's back in town, the JCC called him up after moving here 6 months into our residency in Delaware. Hey, Richard, will you want to be on the board? So he's been on the Jewish Community Center board for 45 mm-hmm. years in one role or another. And I found other organizations to spend my time. Mostly, it became somewhat of a logistical effort. The JCC met on Monday, so I was on the Jewish Nursing Home Board that met on Thursdays. And then when our kids grew up or became high school age, there's a BBG chapter here. But because there's only one chapter here, it was different than the way we programmed in Memphis. They did some local programming, but they had a convention once a month. The girls were going out of town to meet with other Jewish youth groups because there weren't other groups here in town. There wasn't as large a population in Wilmington. So it was the same group, but just a little bit different in how it functioned.
Mm-hmm. And are you still involved now?
A little bit. More as I have told a number of the organizations that I'm happy to lend you my gray hairs of wisdom, but I've done my share of fundraising. I've mm-hmm. done my share of chairing committees. I'll come in, I'll stuff envelopes, I'll do episodic kind of volunteering, but I'm not going to chair anything, and I'm not going to have, I don't want homework.
And so you talked about that most of your friends were involved in the organizations too,
mm-hmm.
but did you have any friends from school that weren't Jewish or that weren't involved in those same organizations?
Not really. I had friends who were, as I said, I was on the yearbook staff. I did a few other things in high school. So I had friendships that pretty much were not 9 to 5, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
8 to 3:15 friendships.
Yeah.
My better friends were all Jewish, and that continued to college because I did pledge a Jewish back in the day. We had only Jewish sororities. I went to the girls' college of Tulane University, and when we rushed, Jewish girls back then, the fall of 65, could be rushed by all the sororities, but rarely, if ever, got called back for one of the non-Jewish sororities. So I pledged a Jewish sorority. So at college I had some non-Jewish friends, but they still were more Jewish friends.
Okay. And did you do anything on your weekends that was not involved, like with the organizations? Like, did you travel at all?
Traveling was not Not that much. My parents were the limited means comparatively to what, you know, my children were fortunate enough to grow up in. We went, as a matter of fact, some years I remember my father, instead of taking vacation, worked and got paid for his vacation because he needed the money.
Mm-hmm.
We went, you know, Memphis is on the Mississippi River. My mother's younger sister lived in Florence, Alabama, which the Tennessee River goes from, say, Knoxville, dips down into Alabama, Muscle Shoals area, and then comes back up to Nashville. And that's where my aunt lived with my three cousins. So I'd say once a quarter, we either, my aunt's family would come up to Memphis because her mother-in-law lived in Memphis, or we'd go down there. My mother's brother lived in Tupelo, Mississippi. Places, I'm sure you guys, Elvis is from Tupelo. Was from Tupelo. And so we'd go there. I had relatives still over in Little Rock. The big vacation, or the thrill, was to go, Hot Springs, Arkansas is about an hour west, southwest of Little Rock on beautiful lake, hot with hot springs, as the name implies. There's a national park there. And we would vacation there for a weekend, a big vacation. You know. Couple of years, we would drive to Florida to visit my father's sister who lived there at the time. But that was, vacations were not as prevalent as they were, say, to my kids growing up, or the way I hear my kids talking now. They're going here for Christmas break, and here, I did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The one vacation I did take once I was in high school, and it actually became my Hanukkah present for Hanukkah. We had youth group, the region that I was in, the Cotton States region, had a convention at Christmas time. So I would go to the convention and stay in a hotel with a couple of hundred other Jewish youth for 4 or 5 days. And then in the summer, I went to leadership camp up in the Poconos, it was, for one summer I went for 3 weeks, and then for international convention. So that was a big, you know.
And so you said that you went to Tulane, so what did you get your degree in there?
I didn't finish there. I finished at Memphis University, or what was then Memphis State. My degree is in poli-sci and minors in psych and soc. I was going to be a social worker, and got accepted to graduate schools, but the only financial support I had at the time for graduate school was actually a scholarship through BBYO, but I would have had to pay them back for every year of social work school, which was 2 at the time, for a year of service. And I knew from having been in BBYO and worked in BBYO, that meant they were going to send me to some far podunk place.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I didn't have a man in my life, and I could just see what kind of Jewish life am I going to have, or chance of meeting a Jewish guy, if they send me to Savannah, Georgia, or to, you know, because that's where they needed a regional director or something. So I passed on the opportunity to be a social worker, which turns out it was probably for the better, because I don't know that I could ever have developed the just passion to, you know, to not get involved with
mm-hmm.
my clients and not lose sleep over what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, I found a job. I worked for the government in D.C. That's it. I had taken the civil service exam, and again, my parents were civil service workers, so this was okay by them. I went to Washington in the late summer of 69 to look for a job. And where I was looking for a job in every social work kind of setting, from was in HEW, from Social Security Administration, from all, you know, and I couldn't find anything. It was also a recession at the time. So, and I had already signed a lease on an apartment, which was out in the Maryland suburbs. And one day after looking for a job, I got on my bus to go out to my apartment, and this elderly gentleman sat down next to me. He has to be younger than we are now because he was still working. But he seemed as old as I am. And we got to talking, and he said, you know, he says, you know, I'm the administrative officer of the training division, and we have an intern program, and your credentials sound like it might be a fit. He says, how about you call me tomorrow morning and come in for an interview? So that's right, the training division at the Internal Revenue Service. My education and training, you know, like right brain, left brain, whatever, was so different than IRS. But they had an interesting training program where they brought people in to, the, you know, it was almost like a condensed teacher certificate to how to write a course, how to develop a course, how to teach instructional methods to others. Because their philosophy was, every year there's tax law changes. So every year we bring in accountants to rewrite the training programs for the new accountants. And the training division would work with those accountants to how to create the course. And then to help those accountants develop presentation skills, so that when they get asked a question about subsection 3 under article of the new tax law says this, what does it mean, and how they could answer it, whereas I couldn't make it yet. So it was interesting work, and the people were interesting.
A follow up question.
Yeah.
Why did you transfer from Tulane? To, or like what?
I transferred, yes. As I said, my parents were of limited means. Even with financial aid, it still was an expensive college. And my younger brother was scheduled to go off to school after I was, and he was the one that was going to become, and did become, the doctor. My father didn't. And I was having an okay social time. I wasn't having a wow, you know. And I was making very good grades. I think my 2 years at Newcomb, I made 1B, you know. And I said, wait a minute. We're still spending, and I'm still taking out loans. I'm a very practical person. It did not make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I transferred home. I lived at home. So I had even less of a fun life. but I did date and meet some nice people. And I got this job being the equivalent of the city director of BBYO. It paid $400 a year. Lo and behold, that was my tuition. And then my brother ended up going to Emory, also on a scholarship. And then he ended up going to medical school. But after his first year of medical school, he got a public health scholarship. That also has a payback. But it's different. He was a single guy, and he could be wherever.
So I know you talked a little bit about your employment. Oh, sorry, background. Yeah. Did you ever go to any Jewish schools or like Hebrew school or any like night classes? Like
I went to Sunday school in Memphis. My mother's family, my maternal grandmother was from Memphis. When her family came over, they were Eastern European Orthodox, and the established Jewish community in Memphis, and I'm going back into the early 1900s, was Reform, German Reform, not Polish. And so they became founding members, however poor they were, of what was and potentially still is one of the largest Orthodox synagogues in the United States. So when we moved back down to Memphis, that's where the family was. So that's where we joined, even though we were far from Orthodox. At that time, I could have gone to Hebrew school, but my parents didn't push me, and I just went to, most girls just went to Sunday school. The synagogue, however, did start in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. We had a bat mitzvah class. So we went on Wednesday. I remembered something, Richard, without your help. We went on Wednesday afternoon for a bat mitzvah class. And I still have a book that taught me how to keep a kosher home. And then I had other things. But then I had a group, because back then and still now in Orthodoxy, Jewish girls don't get bat mitzvah. So I had a group bat mitzvah back when I was 13. So a lot of what I learned Hebrew-wise is rote. And I marvel at the education my daughters have had, because we're in the conservative synagogue now. They can still sing a prayer or a song even when the cantor changes the tune. Once they change the tune on me, because I learned it by rote, I can sight read, I know the letters, I can sound things out slowly, but not enough to join in joyously and get into the action. But I really credit the youth group with my Jewish learning, because we had Jewish programs. Always had services at convention. When I spent the 3 weeks up at Camp B'nai B'rith in leadership training, we had Jewish scholars in, and you know, it was the kind of stuff that, you know, you say, gee, why wasn't it so interesting in Hebrew school? Because I might have learned more. So
you talked a bunch about earlier the bunch of different jobs that you have had. But did you ever find it hard to find work being a Jewish woman? Like, did you not bother applying to some places or looking at some places for work?
I don't think so. I know, as I said, I do remember in high school that there being things that you just didn't think of. I can remember I swam on the swimming team at the JCC, and we had meets with other swim meets with other swim clubs, and I can remember getting some jeers and some I don't know that I ever felt that I lost a job or didn't get a job because I was Jewish. Not that in other things I do have a paranoia complex. I do think about that. Anyway.
So how many jobs have you held in your lifetime?
Well, let's see. Counting that college, I went to work for IRS. I moved here It took me a long time. It seems I always relocate. I went from Memphis to Washington to here. That's my relocations. In 71, it was also a recession. So the federal government, I thought I had a job at IRS here, and I would have just transferred. But I didn't. Finally, after 6 months, I found a job doing training, but doing training for the VA here, and actually doing the training, and did a lot. The VA here had gotten demerits or by the Federal Employees Organization for not being an open enough workplace, so they needed to retrain some supervisors. It was a very hierarchical, militaristic kind of thing. Also, with vestiges of Jim Crow and the kind of segregation issues that I knew of down south. I preface this, I'll tell you, my junior year in high school, again, I was active, I was on the annual, I was a good student, and the principal called us in, this is the spring of 64, to his office to tell us that the following year, 64-65, we would not have a senior prom because the year after that, the city schools were going to be desegregated, and we can't have any mixing in social. So, So I came to Wilmington, I got a job for the VA, and you could just see in the various divisions in the VA, there were a lot of black African-American employees, but they only rose to a certain level in the GS, the employment grade system. Mm-hmm. There were very few, if any, black professionals in 71, excuse me, at the VA here. So my job was to help train supervisors.
So can you talk a little bit about your observance levels, like as a child, and then growing up, and then raising your own family here?
We did not keep kosher. I think both sets of my grandparents did, but we did not. I can remember when my grandparents came to live with us in Memphis, they had been kosher, and my mother had been kosher, but kosher meats were exorbitant. I mean, they still are. But when Grandma and Grandpa lived with us, we had kosher meat at the house. Now, we didn't have kosher dish. We didn't have umpteen dishes and all that sort of stuff. We went to services when there was something to go for, other not just for services. Mm-hmm. We lit Friday night candles. We did all the holidays. So much so that our family, we were, somebody must have been, we were not in an affluent neighborhood by any stretch. And somebody must have knew. They saw us go for Rosh Hashanah services, 1 day, 2 days. 10 days later, Yom Kippur, we come back, we had been robbed. And police said, somebody must have been looking at your patterns. Anyway. Yeah. So, we were more than 3-day-a-year Jews then. And as I said, there was a delineation between Jew and non-Jew. So my Girl Scout troop, of which my mother was the leader, was through the synagogue. And then I was in the equivalent of a Junior Hadassah, which is the women's organization for Israel mostly. And then I went on to B'nai B'rith Youth. So that, you know, and when we got married, Richard grew up in a conservative synagogue here, Beth Shalom. I said, okay, I can join that one. No, I'm not. His family had been in the retail business, and his father, they had a grocery store. Well, once the store, you know, his father didn't, you know, they were at the store. So his level of observance in that regard was a little bit less than mine, but every bit as gastronomic as mine. So again, we lit candles Friday night, and over the years that has diminished. Started when our daughters were younger, and when they started to go out on Friday nights, you know, we talked about insisting they stay home for dinner. You can't go with your friends and then go to the football game.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you know, I can't make it that hard, because in the meantime, if somebody would have called us, hey, you want to go out, we mm-hmm. would have gotten a sitter to go out. So our level of practice over the years, I don't light candles that often. It's less, and yet in some respects it's more. And some of it depends on what we're involved in at the time. He's on the music committee at our synagogue now, and we have a cantor who's a lovely woman, beautiful voice, and has instituted Shabbat Kalenus on four Friday nights during the school year, say. Tonight happens to be one of them, so we're going. You know, so we do go. We probably go to synagogue more than a lot of our friends, but far from
mm-hmm.
what those who I consider observant.
And are your children observant?
Well, we found out last night, our older daughter, who married a Jewish guy, who also both grew up conservative, she told us their sukkah flipped over again in the wind last night. Now, after thinking to myself, you can erase this comment, what's it still doing up, because the holiday is over? I bit my tongue and didn't say anything. She said she always wanted a sukkah growing up. I said, well, that's news to us. So they are not kosher, but they are more observant, I would say, than we are. I think they want to give their kids a stronger
mm-hmm.
foundation. Their girls are twins, very fraternal twins. They have spent three summers now up at Camp Ramah, which is the conservative camp up in the Poconos. Oh, I guess they have more than just the Poconos. This dog, Stacy, the older one, also was regional president of BBG and president of Hillel at Delaware, and led services at. I think she wants the girls to be able to do what she did.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't keep kosher. And the girls are in a youth choir at their synagogue, so they go to services a little more than we do, because the girls are going to be singing.
Mm-hmm. So now we're going to switch to women's roles in Judaism. So when you were young, did you find that there were kind of roles for girls and boys, and did you see it like change throughout the years?
It has definitely changed. As I said, I was raised in an Orthodox synagogue, and my mother and I sat on the side. We could look, or up in the balcony, we could look and see when Daddy and my brother were misbehaving, and they heard about it later. And I had a group bat mitzvah, not the whole shebang.
So did boys have their own?
Yeah, boys had their own, yeah. It's over the years in Judaism, it's become a whole big production. It used to be you just got called up, said the prayer and over the Torah, and became a quote man in with a man's obligations in the religion. And so when bat mitzvah, when the female side of that came into being, was, I'm not even sure the day when, somewhere in the 50s, 60s, I guess. But anyway, I had a group bat mitzvah. I would never join a synagogue now that wouldn't let me, if I wanted to, not that I do, but do. The flip side of that, however, is our synagogue now, we're egalitarian. If you want an honor on the high holidays, if you want to go up and say the blessings over the Torah, you have to have your head covered as a woman, which, I mean, in traditional Judaism, women cut their hair and they wear wigs, so their hair is, you know. I don't object to that, but in the last few years, they've insisted that you also wear a tallis. I don't own a tallis. I don't want to buy a tallis for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know. In the meantime, my older daughter is making tallises for herself and her daughters for 2 years from now, for their bat mitzvahs. But I want, women have to have that ability. I don't, although I do think it's very important for one part of the couple that's raised, and I say that, you know, because whether it's the man, the woman, or the woman and the woman, but there needs to be someone strong at home to, I have not lived in a, my job after we had kids was never as important as his, and him spending time at the office was more beneficial than me spending time at my 9-to-5 job. So one of us had to be around to get the Passover Seder put together, you know. So yes, but things have changed.
And did you find that education for women was supported?
As a, you know, Jewishly, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It became so. I think if I was the kind of young lady when I was 10 or 11 and I had said to my parents then, this is what, how come you're sending my brother, Jay, to Hebrew school and not me? You know, they probably would have sent me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not that adamant in doing that.
And were there women's roles in your synagogue growing up?
Growing up? There were teachers. And the teachers growing up were very learned. So, you know, and again, this was an Orthodox synagogue, so I can remember Mrs. Blackman. Could, you know, I mean, knew Hebrew, could do all that stuff, you know. So she had to have learned it somewhere, and she was, and granted, how old was I then, but she was old. And so she learned it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think ever since I've been in Wilmington, it took a while before our synagogue here had their first women's president. And the first woman president of the JCC was, I think, in the late 60s, early 70s. So, you know, things have changed, but not on a fast track necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, so now we're going to talk a little bit about anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. So did you have any experiences with that when you were in Memphis, like growing up in your childhood?
Well, as I said, it was there were groups that you knew you wouldn't get a bid to.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew, in high school, you knew that there was only going to be one Jew on the student council that was put up for office, you know. So in that regard, yes. Growing up, again, I grew up down south. It was much more prevalent, the anti-black feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I feel some more. I think about anti-Semitism more now because I think we're reverting a little bit. I don't feel it that much, and maybe that's because my life is, you know, has big. It was insular, it expanded, and now it's becoming a little more insular.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever experience that? I'm in the workplace.
No, I don't think so. At least not that I can, you know, say, oh, they hired this one, not me.
Mm-hmm.
Or this one got a job, got an accolade, not me. And it's because.
Now, when you say we're, like, reverting back a little bit, what do you mean by that?
That I, again, my social life as a college student, was pretty much all revolved around Jewish activities. Mm-hmm. Youth group, the JCC, day camp. And now my life is, we live right behind the JCC. I exercise at the JCC. So that's what I mean, yeah.
Okay. Right, so in higher education, kind of besides, like, taking the bids for the sororities, so did you find any anti-Semitism in, like, your classes, from your professors, or from anything that wasn't?
No, not at, Sophie Newcomb, which is the girls' college of Tulane,
mm-hmm.
And Tulane was frequently called Jew-Lane. So of Jewish schools, of non-Jewish schools, it had, even back in the mid-60s, had a large Jewish population, which is one reason I was allowed to go there, because my parents had sent me for counseling to Jewish Family Service, what college would be good, what should I go into and what college, you know. So I took the aptitude test.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it said I could be anything I wanted to be. But I scored high on becoming an undertaker. I said, what? But more so than that, because I was a good student, more so than that, my parents wanted to know, and there were records, whether they were official records or statistics, what good schools offered the best financial aid without regard to being Jewish. So where was I more likely to get,
mm-hmm.
A need-based scholarship? And they did the same thing when that's why my brother went to Emory. They did the same thing for both of us.
Alrighty, so have you ever traveled to Israel?
Yes.
And what did you, what did you do while you were there? Did you have any kind of, like, strong feelings or attachment while you were there?
We went, I birthright wasn't invented yet.
Mm-hmm.
We got married February of 71, and in August of 72, we went to Israel. We took our, what we lovingly refer to as our BK trip, for four kids. And it put back us owning a home for a year because the money that we had been saving mm-hmm. for a down payment went to the trip. But we went to Israel for 10 days. We went to Athens for 3 days, and we went to Rome for 3 days. Because we both were federal workers at the time. He was an assistant U.S. attorney, mm-hmm. and we had a lot of vacation. And Israel was wonderful. And one of the things we were thinking about, because of our involvement when we were younger in youth groups, could we live there? We came to the conclusion we couldn't. Wow. But the love for Israel did not stop. At that point, we met in Israel these friends of mine. He had been the national president of the boys' youth group. And he and his wife were on a year's or just a summer's, because Richard was a lawyer. He was already there. He was already an attorney himself. They were there for the summer. They were and they were living in a dorm on Mount Scopus, and we got in and we went to visit them the first night, and we went around. It was a lot of fun. And then we caught a tour, and did the typical Israel tour. And that was 72. And then we did not go back until, because circumstances came up and finances came up, and going to Israel was just we didn't take those kinds of big trips. We took trips, but we didn't take those kinds of big trips. And then finally, in 15 years ago, for his 60th birthday, right, we took our children to Israel, and we took our older daughter and her husband, and our younger daughter who didn't have a guy, and the five of us went to Israel on a private tour. So this is just 14 years ago, and we found a wonderful tour guide, and we did the same thing, or attempted to do the same thing. Not to get into politics, but all of us were very put out with the results of the 2016 election. Our second daughter married not just a non-Jew, but an African-American. And we were all, can we live here? Can we, it just seemed like our life as we knew it was going to be changed, and it has to some extent. So we were saying, where can we take them? Let's go away, And we had it all planned. We got out we're sitting around the kitchen table. We got out our cell phones. Mm-hmm. Whose time is here and there? And when we had it all planned for February of 2017 to take. Again, this would have been for his, this was really as a result of the election. Anyway, to take the whole family, including the 3-year-old and the 2 8-year-olds. Except he developed, my husband, I'm pointing to the stairs to the basement. He had a bad back, and he was in therapy and needed shots and didn't do better. And finally his doctor said, we had it all planned. We're going to use the same tour guide from 14 years before. Mm-hmm. We had it all planned to rent a motorized cart. And finally the physician, the doctor here said, Richard, who we're friends with, he says, Israel's got great medicine. I can't guarantee that it's not going to act up there and act up to such a degree that the shots aren't going to do it. You're going to need to go into the hospital, and you're going to be away from home. Do you want that? So here it is, we're, thank goodness we had the financial wherewithal, we're treating. Finally, I think a week before we were taking the trip, we told the kids, we can't go. Now, we had already bought the air tickets. And they had already taken up time and everything. So they went with our credit cards and had a ball. And they sent pictures galore, and we FaceTimed, and we saw their trip, and they still talk about it, which is great. Mm-hmm. So then the next year, the winter of 18, January to February, we went ourselves because we were able to use the airfare, and we went for 3 weeks, okay. Which was wonderful because what we were able to do, again, using the same tour guide we had used 15 years before, we told them we only wanted to go to places we haven't seen or that have changed significantly. Mm-hmm. So we didn't do the Dead Sea again. But what we did do is we would tour for 3 or 4 days and then have 3 days or so of downtime, mostly in a big city. So we spent 3 or 4 days in Tel Aviv, 3 or 4 days in Jerusalem, just on our own, wandering around. Wonderful trip. Wonderful trip. Wonderful memories.
And did you notice throughout the 3 times that you had gone, was there anything that really sparked you as like, oh, like this changed or this is different? Or?
Well, the history and the archaeology is just amazing, what they keep unearthing, mm-hmm. You know. The rise of the ultra-Orthodox is from 72 till now. I mean, I don't remember seeing that many ultra-Orthodox in 72. Our trip in, whenever it was, when he was 60, yeah, was, in 09, I know when it was. We went, when Katrina hit New Orleans, we hit Israel. Because, as a matter of fact, because some of the cab drivers we had would tell us, boy, it's horrible what's going over in your country. But we didn't know America treated its people like that. I said, thank you. In Israel, I have to hear this. But a lot more, because of the second trip, when we took the kid, just the adult children, we used our lot. We had a bunch of frequent flyer miles and points from his work and everything. So we were able to book 3 rooms in Jerusalem for 5 nights. And it didn't cost us anything because we had enough Marriott points. The hooker was the hotel we picked was the Renaissance, which is out of the old city. So every time we wanted to go into the old city on our own, as opposed to a tour, part of the tour we lined up, mm-hmm. We had to hire a cab. And we didn't all fit in one cab, so we would have to split them. But, and the reason I mention it is, it was a high-rise hotel, and we were there on a weekend, and there are a lot of ultra-Orthodox staying in the hotel, and so one of the elevators had been commandeered to become the Shabbos elevator, where it stopped at every floor, so that if you were ultra-Orthodox, you didn't have to push the button to stay there. And I don't remember seeing that much. Mm-hmm. That was different. We did, you know, we've had the same tour guide now, and we've talked to him. He says it's Arab-Israeli relations are not wonderful. He said, but it's not as bad as the media makes it out to be. Mm-hmm. He says I have Arabs I deal with all the time, and so.
Alright, so kind of a last kind of wrap-up mm-hmm. question. What does it mean to you to be Jewish in America?
Well, what does it mean to me? I would like to say it means that I'm no different than anybody else, but I do feel different because, as I said, I have a healthy dose of paranoia that, does somebody think that about me? Because, you know, as I said, I worked in government. I worked in the federal government. I worked later in the state government here. And my last name is Levin. And we're not that prevalent here. So, you know, every once in a while, not that I think anybody ever said anything to me, but do they look at me and say, oh, that, she can be like that because she's got money, she's Jewish, you know, this kind of thing. So, it just may be my paranoia. Just recently, something happened where my immediate thought was, you know, because three people I know got reassessed on their taxes, and we called about it, and we're told that somebody said, "Oh yeah, you've made these improvements to your house." And I turned to Richard and I said, wait a minute, who are these other three? Who are the other two? I said, we're all Jewish. So that's what it means to me. That would be my thought. Mm-hmm. My second thought is that, hey, wait a minute, we're all very involved in the condo association. And maybe people don't like us for that. But, mm-hmm. but the first thought was that I am an American, but I am a Jewish American, and I feel it from within. You should get that. I feel it from within, and I also feel it from that people may be thinking of me that way.
Alrighty. Well, I want to